let's give a New York welcome to Rebecca Lieb.
Thanks so much. I think the other fun fact I should point out about myself is I was not on drugs when I did this PowerPoint. I think the screen is wavy, but you know, it's having a bit of an effect. So good morning. I am a research analyst covering the industry. My field is digital marketing and media, but I have the distinction, my big claim to fame, for better or for worse, is I've done more research on content marketing and content strategy than anyone else in the industry. And I have been looking very hard recently at content marketing performance. And the reason that I've been looking at it, and we just talked about sales in Bernie's track, is too many content marketers are trying to measure content marketing performance with one of two things. One is sales, which is, you know, how many widgets did we sell as a result of this content initiative? That can be really hard to prove. The other is with volume metrics, which is how many likes did we get or how many shares? All that stuff is really great, but it would be kind of like Bloomingdale's measuring their success as to how many people walked through the door rather than how many people walked through the door and bought stuff or did something useful. Sometimes I go to Bloomingdale's if I'm in the neighborhood and I need to use a ladies' room because I know where they are. So that is not a great metric of sales. And while content marketing has been getting more and more adopted successful, people say content is the new black, 67% of marketers named measurement, this was a quant survey I did, as the top area in which they need improvement, in which they need results. What can I take to my boss? What can I take to my CEO, my CFO, to show that my content is working? And measuring content can be really complex. One reason is because content is everywhere and everything. The title of my new book, Shameless Plug, is Content, the Atomic Particle of Marketing. And that's because there is no marketing without content. Even in advertising, where content is called creative because it's more expensive, so it needs a fancy name, the creative you put in an ad is content. The content in social media is content. So it's not just owned media. Content permeates paid, owned, and earned. So content analytics are only beginning, and that when something's beginning, it means there aren't a lot of standards and best practices. There's also a ton of vendor proliferation. I've examined over 200 vendors in the content marketing landscape. I've identified 8 different work group scenarios that these vendors address in content marketing, and I've addressed the one single commonality that all of those 200 vendors have, which is a dashboard. And, you know, just logically, 200 dashboards might as well be 0 dashboards, because that's just numbers and data all over the place. It's not very helpful. And also, there are strategic challenges. Content can tend to have low visibility within an organization. Very few organizations have content departments. There is communications, there's social media, there's advertising, there's branding. All of you guys use content no matter where you are in the organization, but attributing metrics to the content can be difficult if content doesn't have its own carve-out. And that's why people are measuring volume, not impact. It's great to go to your boss and say 3 million people liked this, but so what? So what I'm here to help you with today, hopefully, is inspiration. What I'm going to present today is a portfolio of case studies of marketers who are measuring stuff with content marketing that have real business impact, real, in many cases, financial impact, numbers that you could take to your CFO, but aren't measuring sales. I really am deliberately leaving sales out of the equation. Not that we don't all love sales, not that sales aren't important, but my goal today is to inspire you to think beyond sales, but think of other ways that you can meaningfully measure content marketing, as well as help you forge some strategic next steps. And that is a slide that shouldn't be there. Whoops. So we just launched this new company, Kaleido Insights. I launched it together with 4 former colleagues 2 weeks ago, and this is our new slide template. I guess I went a little bit overboard. this is kind of the money shot. This is research I did when I was still at Altimeter Group. This is my sort of compass in finding six different metrics that relate to business goals and content strategy. I don't know if those photographs are going to be visible, but you can find this on my RebeccaLieb.com website if you want to download this slide. So one is innovation, brand health, marketing optimization, revenue generation, not sales, but where and how you can earn money, operational efficiency, and customer experience. I'm going to show you a case study of how each one of these can be improved by content marketing with tangible business results, and also hopefully inspire you to think of stuff to do with content outside of just increasing sales. And these are starting points. They're ingredients. Your business is different. Your business is going to have its own goals, its own needs, and its own strategies, and its own tools. So I want to inspire you, not give you step-by-step instructions today. So let's start with brand health, which is content and the responses to content that signal how communications are working or are not working. And these are insights that can help inform your investments and your strategy going forward in paid, owned, and earned media. And this is going to be the closest thing I'm going to show you to volumetrics, likes and dislikes, but it goes further. So the Seattle Seahawks' objective was to use digital not just to mirror what was going on, you know, on the game, on TV, in the stadium, but to really expand user engagement with the team, expand the fan base, of course, sell more tickets, but also to get their public more emotionally involved with players, as well as, in some cases, to sell merch, you know, all those t-shirts and stuff. So what their social media team did was plan different content and social initiatives that players and fans could get involved in. So that one on the top is Snoop Dogg visits the players on the field and hands out t-shirts or something like that. Another one was a charity initiative in which players, you know, in uniform visited sick children in a hospital to cheer them up. And so it was, what are fans engaging with as individuals and as a community? So lots of engagement measurement there. But the Seahawks' objective was not just to see what engages, what doesn't, but to grow engagement over time by applying learnings about what's working and doing more of that. So they saw a 40% increase in their overall social audience and a 173% increase in engagement by refining this is what's working and what's not working. This was an optimization tactic that informs all media, not just social media, moving forward. These slides are difficult to read, but there are different ways to measure brand health. There's sentiment, content performance, share of voice versus if it's NFL, or Seahawks or football, right? Because I really don't know about sports. Other teams in the league, how much influencers are talking about you, how much you can engage influencers, Snoop Doggy Dog. And each one of these metrics can show different things that I won't go into here, but again, you can download this report for free on my website. Marketing optimization means a whole bunch of things. It's an umbrella term, but it basically means making your marketing better, taking it up a level, moving it ahead. And I really like what Rockenbach did. Rockenbach is a toy company. Is anybody familiar with it? Because I wasn't, one person. So Lego plus robotics. So Rockenbach was challenged because, as you know, retail stores are becoming all but extinct. And this is a product that if you can't see it doing the thing that it does, think Lego plus robotics, you're not going to be interested in buying it. So what was Rockenbach to do? If you can't see and feel the product, you're not going to buy it. Retail display, merchandising is going down the tubes. So Rockenbach started creating YouTube videos that demonstrated the potential of their products, the different features. They entertain, they show you how to put together different stuff with the products. And by the way, when they were putting together these videos, they were naming them and tagging them with very, very specific SEO terms, because as we all know, YouTube had it not been acquired by Google, would be the second largest search engine in the world. Then fans started creating their own videos as well, so you've got the UGC aspect, and they were aimed at different segments, sort of the hardcore DIYers, kids, Christmas, all those different segments. And now they have transformed from an almost 100% bricks and mortar business to 50% of their customers now come in to their website from YouTube and buy directly from the company. So this is a way of measuring content, not so much by sales, although sales are certainly part of this equation, but using content to transform the way that you actually do business and to actually survive and thrive in an environment that became very hostile to the traditional way of doing business. And of course, YouTube is the number one source of traffic to the website, which is of course an e-commerce site. So marketing optimization metrics are very much based on cost savings, revenue conversions, traffic conversions, leads by channel. Again, this is downloadable. And revenue generation is also content that helps drive consumers through specific parts of the sales funnel. So actually looking at the sales funnel, anticipating what's next, doing that path of persuasion, and helping customers to get to that next step in the sales funnel. So Zenni Optical, it's kind of like a Warby Parker type business. It's glasses online. And they know that buying glasses, which is a very personal decision, a very tactical decision, you try them on, you ask, how do I look? You want to know if you need the coating, and what does the coating do anyway? And then you have to measure the bridge between your eyes, and oy, it's so complicated. Why don't I just go to Cone Optical down the street? So they have added search, offsite content, social media, everything they can possibly do to enable the buying process on their website. So they have infographics on emerging optical technology. So what are all these coatings that you never think about till you're in the store, and then they ask if you want them and you don't even know what they are. How do you measure the space between your eyes? There's a thing you can print out and actually measure, so it's a tool. What kind of glasses fit what kind of face types better? They'll send you glasses to try on, and there's a whole Instagram channel where you can, people will vote up or vote down. You know, how do I look in these? You can leverage the crowd and leverage your friends. And so they have chopped up the sales funnel into consideration, purchase, loyalty, and innovation. They're thinking of the entire customer journey and matching content to those different phases. And notice that it goes past the purchase. It goes into how can we get customers to recommend us to their friends? How can we capture ideas from the crowd and then leverage them to improve our sales process, improve our products, or improve our services? So this whole cycle of content never stops from awareness and consideration all the way through to post-purchase. So popularity and productivity are the two major metrics in revenue generation. And it's not just how many sales, but things like time to market. Can we make this whole purchase process shrink from, say, 1 week to 3 days? That's revenue right there, but you've got to measure it, not just measure how many units did we actually sell. Another way that content can improve the bottom line is operational efficiency, cost control, content repurposing, using content to do things that would be more expensive or less effective in other channels, like employee engagement. And I really love this this case study, Unilever, which has, you know, and I'm generalizing, like a Carl Sagan number of billions and billions of products and thousands of agencies in literally almost every country in the world except North Korea. It's a very big company. So efficiency is key with a company like this, and tying things together are very key. So with 400 brands, 190 countries. Unilever tried, this was a couple years ago, with just three brands, Knorr Soup, Hellmann's Mayonnaise, and Surf Detergent. They invested in collaborative tools, and in this case, the tool was Percolate, credit where it's due, and they made all their 40 agencies in 20 markets use one collaborative tool. So when there was an approved product shot of the bottle of mayonnaise or the envelope of soup mix, that went to everybody. You didn't have to reinvent the wheel market to market, brand to brand, region to region. They had brand guidelines. They had approved tweets. Obviously, there were cultural and local translations, but the fundamental assets were used globally. And I don't know if that's on the slide. Slide's missing here. They increased operational efficiency across three brands in 1 year to the tune of $1 billion. Now, you won't do that because you're probably not as big as Unilever, but obviously this is something that Unilever is scaling out now to many of its other brands because they proved they could save a lot of money creating content, working with their agencies and partners by getting everybody on the same page and sharing assets. So operational efficiency metrics all come down to productivity and cost savings. Customer experience is another very strong area for content and content metrics. And it's not just attracting leads and sales support, but also things like customer aftercare and getting customers into the right channels. I love this case study. I met with Nico Hendricks, who is the head of community at Sony Europe. And Nico, who has sort of like a journalist gene, even though he's not a journalist, goes around the company and talks to people, which is what good content marketers and content strategists do. And he happened to be talking to the head of the call center one day. And she was saying that the call center was being inundated with calls about a new television set that Sony had recently introduced to the market. And there was something really stupidly easy to figure that customers couldn't figure out. I think it was the function of a button or something like that. So the call center could deal with all these inquiries, but Sony's issue was every time somebody called the call center, it cost the company €7, which is a little bit over $7 to handle. So Nico went back to his desk, wrote like two paragraphs of how to troubleshoot this issue, threw it up on Sony's community site, and bingo, it was viewed 42,000 times in 2 weeks. So this is math I can almost do in my head, and it's a stupidly easy kind of content ROI that you don't even need, you know, Google Analytics for. What's 42,000 times €7? It's roughly 294,000 euros, which is over $300,000 in savings to the company over 2 weeks just because they threw two paragraphs of free content up on the website. And of course, that was just in 2 weeks. People kept looking at the issue and it kept saving the company money during the life cycle of that particular product, that particular television set. And that's why this is one of my favorite case studies, because if you just measure it and apply dollars to it, or in this case, euros, you've actually got a number that you can take to your boss and say, give me more money for content. I saved you $300,000 in the last 2 weeks. So customer experience metrics, popularities, what's most popular, what's most used, but also potential issues and red flags. And that's exactly what Nico did. There was a red flag. The company was losing a lot of money because customers didn't understand something, and he deflected customers from an expensive channel into the website, into an inexpensive channel. The final case study I'm going to share with you is product innovation. R&D, if you work for a company that makes something, is expensive. Figuring out what products are going to resonate with customers, what's going to sell, what's going to not sell, how do you know? It's expensive. It involves a lot of time, effort, and money. Content is a way that a lot of organizations are testing ideas. So a lot of you are probably familiar with My Starbucks idea, in which Starbucks asks you know, has an online suggestion box, and customers can vote up ideas, and Starbucks will implement the most popular ideas, changes to the menu, changes to the stores, etc. This is something that Domino's Pizza did in Australia. They developed a mobile app. They were trying to get people to order pizzas mobily, but the app let people create and name their own pizzas. And if you think of it, it's kind of genius, because pizzas are kind of a limited universe of, you know, you've got the dough and the tomato and the cheese and three kinds of meat and five kinds of vegetables. And people uploaded their pizzas, named them, and then got a commission every time the pizza that they invented sold, you know, like 5%, 10%, whatever. So there was a social media thing. There was sort of gamification to this. You could develop a popular pizza and win fame and glory and actual money. But what Domino's gained from this was market testing. The most popular pizzas, the ones that really flew with audiences, became a permanent part of Domino's menu. And Domino's didn't really have to do anything but supply this universe of ingredients in an app and let their customers figure it out. So innovation gets a lot of attribution in terms of money. I don't know what Domino's typically spends developing new pizzas, but probably a lot more than it costs to develop this app. So this is based on content productivity. Time to market is one of the metrics here, and whether content strategies can aid in time to market or in testing R&D. So with those six examples hopefully inspiring you somewhat to think more broadly about what you can do with content, and there are way more studies. There's ESPN, when they moved to Connecticut, launched a campaign to hire and retain people in Connecticut. And for those of you who are New Yorkers, you know that moving 2 hours into Connecticut is a very, very, very different lifestyle. Employees launched their own Why I Love Working for CNN and Living in Connecticut site. So it highlighted all the benefits of living out near the Hartford area and actually turned into a recruitment and a retention tool for the company. So that's just another example of something that I didn't throw in here. But measurement to do this yourself has to be one of the foundational principles of content strategy. Having a content strategy as opposed to just committing content marketing, which a lot of brands are doing, the tactical stuff, is deciding what your business goals are and how you're going to know if you're achieving them. And you can only know if you're achieving them if you've got some sort of measurement built into the process. And every measurement strategy must therefore focus on a business outcome. And just likes are not a business outcome, but taking those likes and applying them to this is the pizza we should do next, or this is the kind of social media initiative we should do, but not the other kind, which are not getting engagement on social platforms, that starts making sense. No metrics and data. This can be as brutally simple as what Sony did. 42,000 times 7 equals, you know, nearly $300,000 worth of savings. More complex metrics, brand metrics, might require you to bring in some expert help or more expensive tools. Be realistic about what you can do. Not every company is going to have the resources to go beyond Google Analytics or to really do complex, deep metrics. So use the resources that you have and use them widely. Don't just despair and say, oh, we can't measure because we can't afford this enterprise-level tool. Come on, there are a lot of tools out there, and you are going to be able to measure things that are useful no matter what your size. And finally, think about integration when you're thinking about metrics. This is from a study I did. Also, this chart is available on my website of what different content tools need to integrate with what other advertising, marketing, and enterprise platforms. So, for example, if you're doing SEO and audience and targeting, you might need to do some triangulation to make sure that your content tools are working in concert with your search goals so that you can measure appropriately. No software is an island. There are a lot of softwares out there, softwares not being a word. And so you really have to think about how everything is going to play in concert with everything else. And with that, I thank you. And I don't know, do we have time for questions? I don't have a
question. Yes, we do,
here.
Rebecca. We have time.
So I would love to take questions if there are any questions, or maybe you all just want to get to lunch.
Well, we've got time before we go to lunch. So I think you all know the drill. We like to capture the question on audio, so we'll start here.
Hi, how you doing, Marcus?
Thanks
Washington,
for being brave
Georgia
and
Power.
asking.
Oh yeah,
the
no
first
problem.
Question.
Always. So as we talk about analytics and all of the measurables, what about when it comes to the things that you're not necessarily able to measure? One of the things with my company is we try to put out that we're, you know, your friendly neighbor. And we're trying to be out in the community and show those things. So in a sense, the shares and the likes and the comments and those forms of engagement really do resonate well with us when we're trying to build a brand identity. So what do you say to that when you're looking at those things? Something that kind of measuring an emotional pull and being able to show that to upper management.
Yeah, so that would be measuring things like brand sentiment.
Yes.
And that can be brand sentiment, positive or negative. It could be share of voice, you versus, I don't know what you, I didn't hear what business you were in.
Georgia Power.
Okay. You know, versus other competitors, propensity to buy. And brand metrics companies usually have to be pulled into that process to do those complex metrics. It can involve panels. It can involve interviewing consumers. And then that can be a comparison of before the campaign and after the campaign. Did it move the needle? But you've got to plan that kind of measurement into the campaign. So if you didn't do a panel or a survey before you launch this campaign, you don't know if it went up or down because you don't have any data to compare it with.
Other questions?
This lady in front.
Thank you. When you measure your results, do you measure each social media platform separately, or you do an overall measurement of all together?
Different social media platforms have different metrics, so you really can't measure Twitter the same way you measure Facebook. You could measure for some things, like engagement went up 40% on both platforms. It's probably unlikely that it would directly correlate. And then, of course, different social media platforms are very often used for different things by different companies. And there can even be different social media channels per company. So for example, I worked with Home Depot. They've got regional social media. You know, the New York stores are not the Florida stores. You know, one selling snow tires and one selling beach umbrellas in the middle of the winter. So you've got to chop that up according to the use of the social media channel for a specific campaign. And then also think about, well, do I have multiple social media channels? You know, the Seattle Seahawks has one. Unilever probably has hundreds, if not thousands.
Thank you.
And way in the back, because it always works that way with Q&A. It's like a great workout for the person with the mic.
Thank you. I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
I know that a lot of your metrics kind of focus on very specific objectives and tasks. When it comes to building a more annual or long-term content strategy, would you still recommend kind of focusing on specific tasks maybe each quarter? Do you have perspective or recommendation for kind of how to build out that long-term strategy?
Yeah, so when I work with clients and I build content strategies for big brands, what I usually give them is a roadmap of 3 years. Sometimes it's 2 years, sometimes it's 1 year, it depends on the engagement. And then what I do is I chop that, just as you said, into quarters. And if you've got the big, hairy, audacious goal of become the number one manufacturer of pizzas in the world, that's great for year three, but how do you get there? So you say, by the end of Q1, we want name recognition in the marketplace. By the end of Q2, we want a share of voice that is 25% of Domino's because they're the market leaders. I'm obviously just making this up completely out of whole cloth. Or it can be an organizational thing. So I just did a global content strategy for Save the Children. You know, one of those was, we're going to get the third world countries to work more effectively with the first world countries with the introduction of this tool, so that when there is an earthquake, we can have those assets for fundraising up on the web faster, which is one of their goals. You know, like, how do you get real-time marketing out of a disaster zone? But that's how they make money, so it's important to them. What matters to your business, and then chop it up into bite-sized, realizable chunks, because, you know, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, or at least quarterly steps.
So is the next question all the way up in the front? Is that the way it's working? No? Mm-hmm. So, Rebecca, I will ask a question.
Sure.
How do you see persona development evolving? You know, since content marketing now is sort of maturing, mm-hmm. how do you see it evolving?
Hopefully it is evolving. I work with a lot of organizations on helping them to identify personas, but I've really found out that a lot of education is still needed around personas. There's still a lot of market confusion, even in very sophisticated companies, about the difference between a persona and a segment. And, you know, a market segment might be, you know, men 18 to 35, and then another market segment might be soccer moms. Whereas a persona is turning that young man into a literal, well, not literal, but a fictitious person that you can talk to. His name is James. He works for a technology company. He's 22. He has a master's degree. He spends his free time playing video games and jogging. And the more I tell you about James, the more you could talk to James. Whereas male 18 to 35, which is not a persona, it's a segment, is kind of an abstract concept. So the more sophisticated companies are developing personas, and then you would overlay them on something like what Zenni Optical did, and not just look at that purchase funnel in terms of awareness, consideration, loyalty, et cetera, but say, you know, what would Bernie need in those different phases versus Rebecca, because we're different people, different likes, different dislikes, different ages maybe. You know, you don't talk to a teenage girl the same way you talk to your grandmother. And that's what personas get into.
Thank you.
This gentleman? Hi.
Don't you see here a kind of trap? Because setting up many personas, we risk in stuck on producing custom content for every single persona. So how would you address that?
You produce as many personas as there are personas who are important to your business. So obviously you're not going to speak to every individual customer, although with automation and AI you will soon be able to. That was the focus of my last research report. But you, most companies will identify maybe from 3 to 20, depending on the size of your company and your offering, and stick with a reasonable number that you can handle. Just like with content tools, you know, you've got to play within your means. If you can't invest in brand research studies, then don't measure brand. It's not a sin. We'd all like to have everything. But if you're a small business, 35 personas is way too many. You'll never be able to achieve that. You have my permission to only do as many personas as you can deal with.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, I'll sneak one more. Oh, we got one in the
more?
Back. In the back.
I don't know where we are in terms of time at all.
We're okay. Yeah. Hi there. Thank you for your presentation this morning. What do you think the biggest misgiving is in content marketing, and why more brands aren't adopting content marketing instead of just doing social?
Any brand that's doing social is doing content marketing, I would counter, because there is no social without content. Otherwise, Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus would be really, really, really boring, like, or Instagram. Remember that white piece of paper, and you would say when you were a little kid, this is a snowman and a blizzard. Like, Instagram would be all snowmen and blizzards. It's all content. And I think companies are realizing that it's all content. What is not emerging in many organizations is a separate content division, or titles like editor-in-chief or chief content officer. But I challenge you to identify any major enterprise now today that's not saying that social needs content, search needs content, brand needs content, advertising needs content. Look at the Google trends and the rise of content marketing as a search term. There's objective evidence.
We have time for one more question, so I will ask it.
Okay.
So, Rebecca, comment on the relationship between content marketing and the sales process. And I'll just add that, you know, you obviously work with some large brands.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you've seen that relationship and
oh, yeah.
you can speak to that.
Thank you for asking that. And that is a very, very real question, especially with the advent of things like social selling. Sales forces became content. You said something great in your presentation, which is that marketing and sales are growing increasingly closer together. One example of this, and this starts the clamor for content marketing in a lot of organizations, is they adopt a marketing automation platform like Marketo and that whole family of companies, HubSpot. And then they realize, like, the word automation sounds great, but if we don't feed this thing content like gasoline, it's not going to work. You know, what marketing automation does is automatically sends you messages and content once you engage with the company. So I'm seeing more and more, as you pointed out, convergence between sales and marketing and calls for content training, content creation, social selling training coming up. From organizations, both B2B and B2C. I just worked with a big manufacturer of dental implements, the biggest one in the world. They're called Hufridi. They're really investing in social selling right now. They realized that it wasn't enough to have a content marketing initiative just for their marketing department. Sales needs to be dragged on board.
Thank you. Rebecca, will you be around through lunch?
I'll be around through lunch, and I would love to speak with you one-on-one.
Fantastic.
And thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Coming.